We only address this issue, but now I want to examine another aspect of this. So in Sidkot Yud, this is a reference to that which is found above, namely the obligation to go ahead and when we wash in the morning, we do it three times. That's the Lashon of the Gemara in Shabbos on Kuptesim Abayis Kuptesim Adalot. La'avich Ruach Ruach She'ashor Aleihem. We want to eliminate the Ruach Ruach. So the Mishabruah comments that one time is not going to help. Even if I utilize a lot of water, Mishabruah said that it's irrelevant because the Gemara says that the Ruach Ruach doesn't leave except when one washes three times. Namely, as we pointed out, the Serugin, Mishnah Berurah mentions right, left, right, left, right, left. And then he quotes from the Mishnah Berurah, quotes from the Maisa Rav and the Vilna Gaon, that his practice was to do it four times. And then at the end of that little piece, so he has the following statement. I want to comment on this. In the Sidkot Yud, in the middle of Sidkot Yud says Mishnah Berurah, Tzorach la'azir la'anashim, she'yizaru b'netilas yadayim gimel pomim v'serugin kama ha'anashim. There's no distinction between the male gender and the distaff side. Both of them have an equal obligation to go and be medactic regarding washing for Ruach Ra and doing it alternately. And then he makes the following statement, Vigam, kihem misakno samacholim. Since generally speaking, women are involved with preparation of food, so therefore the problem is, shelo yitama bideyim. If they weren't medactic relating to Ruach Ra of washing their hands in the morning, so they're going to now go ahead and be metami the macholim that they're involved in food preparation. And then he has a second statement. Gam yesh li zoya shaktanim yidlu yideyem b'shachris. That young children, we spoke about this already a number of times, they should wash their hands in the morning. Ki nogim b'machol, they tend to come into contact with food items. And then we spoke about this, if you recall, in terms of what the criteria are as far as chinuch is concerned. I'm not going to focus on that right now. And then the third item, the Mishnah Berurah was benigiyas akum b'macholim lan tiyasadayim im lachush lo mekabim tumah. So this week we spoke a lot about going into food establishments where people don't necessarily wash their hands, non-observant Jews and the like. So we indicated that most Gedolei Achronim assume yesh makom v'hokel because we assume that people generally tend to wash their hands for hygienic reasons, for health reasons, and therefore we can be sovich on that, even though it's not done three times, l'serugin, alternately, right, left, right, left, right, left. But that's the assumption of many Gedolei Achronim. But I want to comment on this Ha'ara of Mishnah Berurah. Why does Mishnah Berurah give a reason regarding women? He says, "Nei shehem misaknos samacholim." What, they don't eat themselves? Women are malachi ashores. They don't have to eat. Why is he giving you an explanation? Misaknot etamacholim. We're worried about their preparation of food for others. Why are we worried about the women themselves? Why don't they have to worry about that issue? And I've noticed over the years, and since I teach women for many, many years, different levels and the like, but primarily post-high school. So I actually queried them about this matter, inquired, and many of them told me that in their homes they're not so makpid. The distaff side is not as makpid as the male gender side. I was flabbergasted, taken aback by that. And I refer them to this Mishnah Berurah. What's the distinction? Whatever Ruach Ra is, which we don't really know what it is, but it exists, and that's mentioned in Zohar, mentioned in Gemara and Shabbos. The Ruach Ra does not discriminate between the genders. It applies to both the male gender, the female gender. So then they asked me the following question. This is a question that came from the distaff side. Since I alerted them to this issue, at this Mishnah Berurah over here, they said, what about, some of them told me they're Bali Tshuva. So they weren't observant at one point in their lives. Their families were not observant at one point in their lives. And they became, Baruch Hashem, observant. They became frum. And they never washed negel vasa. So a young woman asked me, by now, chas v'shalom, our family should be deaf, dumb, and blind. Based on the Gemara. Yad l'peti katzeitz. And the entire litany that the Gemara mentioned that's quoted right here in Shulchan Aruch. I think we referred to it. The nezek that could actually occur, take a look in Gimel. In Gimel, the Mechaber says, "Lo yigabi yado, kodem netila lapeh, v'lo lachotem, v'lo lasnayim, v'lo leinayim." And the Mishnah Berurah right away assumes that you're familiar with the Gemara in Shabbos. Yad laper tikotzeitz, yad lachotem, some terrible things. So what's the pshat in that? So I responded, bitumi, honestly, I did not have a chance. When they asked me this question already, it goes back many, many years, to look into the matter, I said that, how do you know that you weren't affected? Or how do you know that you will not be affected years from now, many, many years, chas v'shalom, it should not have an effect on you whatsoever, but perhaps towards the end of a person's life, when, God forbid, a person gets older, we had recently a Gemara in Shabbos, that the Gemara talks about, the Gemara Dashim Tzukum Koheles, and speak about what happens to people in old age, they generally, their faculties tend to become attenuated, come to be somewhat weakened, and who knows that this perhaps may have been as a result of the fact that they didn't wash Negel Vasa, there's Ruach Ra at the early ages, at the early stages. But then I said to myself, how can I make a statement like that? Mm-hmm. And then I went looking, and I found that there are Gdoli Achonim who say this very explicitly. And I saw, even though we don't necessarily have to be in sync with his Weltschang, his Hashkafic perspectives on many things, from the Satmar Rebbe, Zechem Levracha, that he contends, he has the following question. It says in Halacha, in Hilchos Vila, it's a Gemara actually, it's a Mechamed Shechonoch in Yerodea, that you're not supposed to circumcise a child when the child is yellow. I mean, different Moralim, as you probably know, have different thresholds in terms of when they'll do a Mila. Some will actually be a bit more daring, if I can use the expression, depending on the number, the bilirubin number, that's how it works. And some are, thank God, less daring and more in sync with what I think should be the approach of Nishmatim, Olden Afshosaytim, as I also think regarding the corona situation. So, but there are Moralim who do brisim, and they do brisim even when a child is yellow, when, let's say, the average classical mole would not do so. The question is, how could they do so? It's against the Gemara, and Chazal speaking about collateral damage that will occur as a result of doing a bris mila under those circumstances, so why are they not cognizant of that? So the Satmar Rav said, who says that maybe these people were supposed to live 90 years, 95 years, and perhaps their lives will be shortened, the nezer will occur later on. So I saw that Sabara in the Satmar Rav, who was a giant, he was a goyim. I heard how Soloveitchik was masping him in Maria. I used to go to Shurim in Manhattan, Maria, for many, many years. And when he was nifted, the Satmar Rav, Soloveitchik essentially said that I don't agree with anything in his Hashkofa, except he was on two counts, he was a tremendous person. He was a goyim adir in learning, Yadua. Very sharp and really knowledgeable Torah Kula. And number two, Bal Chesed Mufla. Anyone who knows Satmar Chesidim, I live in many, many cities and I visit people in hospitals and the like, and the Satmar, in terms of Bikur Cholin, their societies that they set up to help people, and they don't distinguish between individuals, whether they're of this bent or that bent, or this Ashkafa, that Ashkafa, or this coloration, or that coloration, they're going in the Chesed. That's why Soloveitchik himself noted that when he spoke about the Satmar Rav. But anyway, this explanation is found that we don't realize what's happening to us. And I went looking further, and I found this another Achronim. This idea, this Svara. Again, these are areas that I cannot possibly connect to be very honest with you. But I want to read now a statement that I saw quoted in the Achronim, because I started looking into this whole matter. The Mekor Chayim, one of the other Achronim, has the following statement. He says, I cited his language, Bismanenu Nevua Nisbatla. We no longer have Nevua. The Gemara says in Babas in the first parak that Nevua was taken from us. It was given to whom? To Shaita Miktani. Given to people who are not necessarily so perspicacious, and also given to young children. And he writes further, Ruach HaKodesh Nismata. And he writes further, as a result of that, Ruach Misaba, Ruach HaTuma, Gamke Nismata. Means all these things are dependent on each other. When we are living in an era, in a zeitgeist of Nevuah, where prophecy is operative and there are Nevi'im, and when we are living in a time when there's Ruach HaKodesh, so then the Kochos HaTuma are greater. But when we are living in a period of time where the Kochos HaTuma are clearly not the same because the Kochos of Kedusha are not the same, so he claims, okay, I'm just sharing with you a position that he takes, and therefore the sakana that Chazal speak about is no longer the same kind of sakana. Again, I cannot very difficult for me to address these issues because I'm operating with a different currency, with a different matbea. But that's what he writes. And I remember when I learned in the yeshiva in Itri many, many years ago, so I used to walk on Shabbos to Yerushalayim. Trust me, to walk from Itri, Beit Tzfafa, if you know what that is, all the way into Yerushalayim, into the city itself. And I'm going to say Shabbos again, I used to come because I used to hear Agurim Rashradom. I used to hear him on Friday night. So I walked several times, back and forth. Friday night, one Friday night he spoke in Hebrew, and the one Friday night he spoke in Yiddish. Next Friday night he used to alternate in Yiddish and in Hebrew. And I went to hear him for close to a year and a half. And then on Shabbos we used to walk into the city. I remember Shabbos, I was on Rehov Yafo, very quiet. I would say even call it halcyon days. Almost bucolic, almost a very suburban, quiet kind of scene. And I used to be there sometimes at Tumotzei Shabbos. We used to go to Shal Shudis, at different homes of the Rabbeim of the Rosh Hashiva and Itri. One especially we went to, he was a Kadim Chassid. I used to sing a lot and say a lot of Divrei Torah, very sharp Divrei Torah. And then, Tumotzei Shabbos, we daven Meir, and then we went, and we went out, wow! We didn't recognize what is happening over here. Like a flood of humanity that emerged on Rehov Yafo, and not always the ideal kind of sight or the ideal kind of ambience that one would expect. So I said that it's clear that Dafka Yerushalayim, you witness it, because the greater the Kedusha, then also the greater the Koach HaTumah. There is clearly a correspondence between the two that we see in Chazal many, many times. And that's what these Achronim are expressing, a similar kind of Hashgav, a similar kind of idea. And I think it's a fundamental idea. But at the same time, even assuming that the Koach HaTumah is not of the same enormity that it was with Zman Chazal, when there was Nevuah and the like, but still, there are Koach HaTumah. And therefore, as a result, there are things that we have to be concerned about, and Chazal speaking about Timtum Alev and affecting the Neshama of the person. I think I told you, I said over this story already a number of times in 1983, when my wife and I were privileged to visit Hagoyin Rav Kamenetsky Zatzal after he retired from Yeshiva Torah V'Das in his home in Muncie. We were there for quite a while. We were supposed to be there for a specific purpose, but at the end I decided to unleash an avalanche of questions to the Gaon HaDor once I had him in front of me. How can I not take advantage of the situation? And among the questions I asked him was the following, and you'll be taken aback perhaps by this question. I taught over the years in Providence, Rhode Island, when I was a mechanech in the beginning of my career, if you will. So there, I taught students who escaped from the Shah, after the Shah fell in Persia, in Iran. So there were many students, they went through the Carpathian Mountains, really harrowing stories, unbelievable stories that, and actually today some of them are very prominent doctors, both in California and also in Great Neck. They're Talmidim of mine. It's good we have such Talmidim. They give money to the yeshiva, that's great. Still have a connection with them. But anyway, so they went through very, I can't believe the experiences they went through. They came without their parents. Their parents were still in Iran and were still suffering after the Shah fell. Then all the, as I call them, the Hamanim, the Khomeinis and company, they appeared on the scene and they took over. And essentially it was a very, an autocratic demagoguery that ran the country. And so, and these people were able to escape. So I found these Persian students to be unbelievably refined, so domesticated, adine nefesh. I saw a sweetness in them. I couldn't believe what's going on here. Why am I saying that? Because I also taught Russian students who emerged from, I'm talking about before the Soviet Union fell apart. The days of Gorbachev and earlier, Khrushchev, you don't remember any of it. Banging on the table in the UN with his shoe, on and on and on, the whole, the entire scene. They were, these Russians were out of control. They were, I don't know how to express it, I'll try to use a polite expression, wilde chayes. Totally uninvestigated, out of control, wild beyond wild. So I figured I have to go to Lador in Muncie, of Yakov Kamenetsky. I'll ask him this question. There were those with me think the thought it was inappropriate, but once the door was open, I went on my merry way. So I asked the Hagoyin Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky Zatzal, how do you explain the distinction between the behavior of the Persian students and the behavior of the Russian students. So he asked me, this is all in Yiddish. He's speaking in Yiddish, and I'm speaking to him in English. So he asked me, are you familiar with Jewish history? I didn't know how to answer the question. I remember I was sort of taken aback. So he said, okay, even if you're not so familiar, I'll give you a bit of a lecture. And he proceeded then to share with me his knowledge starting from 1917, the Russian Revolution, mind-boggling. Rav Yaakov's protim upirtei protim, his knowledge of Jewish history of that kufa, of that period. I was taken aback by that. Matter of fact, in the context of that discussion, he also told me, I think you should study Jewish history. So I asked him, what's the makar? He said, what? The makar, Pasuk Chumash. Zechor Yemos Olam. Binu Shnos Dor Bador. He said, Pasuk Chumash. And then he cited to me all kind of Masame and then others. And if you don't have knowledge of history, and he started citing to me a number of secular historians that history repeats itself, and if you don't study history, you will be missing out. And number two, if you study history and Jewish history specifically, you'll see the Yad Hashem. Anyone who doesn't see the Yad Hashem when you study Jewish history and see all that we've gone through, persecutions and the like. Matter of fact, Rabbi Wein, Shlita, Shashem Yarech Yoma, Ushnosa Ben Eman. So he has these coffee table books on history. Maybe you're familiar with them. Four volumes. That's good to read. I have to be friendly with him, but it's kedai to read because what he does is he goes through different kufas and different, he's primarily focused on contributions, literary contributions of great Jews throughout Jewish history, and also he's talking about different periods of time in Jewish history that were obviously eventful. There's no period that's not eventful, including Zmanenu Anu. Anyway, go back to the original question. So I asked Rabbi Yaakov, how do you explain the distinction? So he gives me this entire lecture. And he points out to me that after 1917, the Russians attempted to obliterate Judaism. They basically decided to decimate Yadus. They realized that the koach of Klal Yisrael is, he quoted the pasuk, lo b'chayel v'lo b'koach yim beruchi yom Hashem tzvokos. The one who said later on was Anatoly Sharansky. When he crossed that bridge, and you see that his spirit, at the end of the day, his feisty spirit, his invincible spirit, was able to overcome the entire Russian bear, or whatever you want to call them, and he had this incredible pneumius that really reflected very much his ruach. Anyway, so he told me, look what happened. And we know what if you ever read the biography of Rav Teitz, Rav Pinchas Teitz Zatzal, written by his daughter Rivka Blau, so she wrote a beautiful biography of her father. He used to go to the Soviet Union, he traveled back and forth many, many times, and he smuggled in Sidurim and Svarim, and he built mikvahs in the Soviet Union, the former Soviet Union. And he was instrumental in being Mekayev, a lot of refuseniks. Unbelievable what went on. She reports that actually what her father did, he was probably one of the fathers of the Kiruv movement in Russia, unquestionably, and there are a number of famous Russian refuseniks that were under his tutelage. And he came tens and tens of times. And the KGB was always following him, and he was always under suspicion and the like, and they were right to suspect him, and he went on his merry way, did what he did. Anyway, so Kamenetsky told me that as a result, literally, there was not even a vestige of Judaism left during the days when these Russian students that you are talking about, when they grew up in Russia. And as a result, they had no choice but to have recourse to non-kosher food. I mean, they ate nevelos and treifas, the double yadua. And the Gemara says that eating non-kosher food is mitamtei libo shel adam. And that creates, and he quoted me, then I saw his knowledge of Kol HaTorah Kula put out right in front of me. All this was like in one continuum. He started for the Rambam Nebuchim and the Rambam Chumash, because the Torah twice speaks about the Parsha of Machlos Hasuras, once in Re'ei and earlier on in Shemini, and he cited Rambans and he cited from Doli HaRishonim how food has an impact on a person, on his neshama, on his nefesh, on and on and on. I mean, it was really one of the longest answers I've ever heard on this topic. And then he said the Persians, however, even after the Shah fell, but the Jewish community in Persia maintained their Masorah, maintained their allegiance, both in terms of kashrus and in terms of whatever they possibly do as far as Shabbos and Taras HaMishpacha, which went by the wayside in Russia completely. And as a result, that's why you have these refined and these very beautiful, sweet young men who come to you from Iran, as opposed to the others. It's not their fault. They just are under ones, unquestionably. This is what I heard from Adonai Kamenetsky. So I remember the one who sent me there was HaGoyim the Nisim Alpin, my Rebbe, the Talmud Rebbe of Moshe Feinstein. So he told me when I come back, tell me everything that the HaGoyim said. And so I quickly reported back to him. So he told me on this issue between the Persians and the Russians, come with me, we have to tell the Rosh Yeshiva. We got to tell the Rosh Yeshiva what you heard from HaGoyim Rabbi Yankim. So he takes me to the Rosh Yeshiva, HaGoyim Rabbi Moshe Feinstein Tassal. So I went to Rabbi Yishev and told him over in my English. Rabbi Yishev didn't speak much English, they all spoke a broken English. Both Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yishev, broken English. Rabbi Yishev kissed me and told me that's why he's called Chakima the Yudoi. He's the smartest, the wisest man of all the Jews. Kach Shamati Mipiv Kocho Shabal Yusmeisha. Okay, so I'm back over here. I'm just trying to connect the dots to what I'm referring you to. So a person who, all of you are outstanding B'nai Torah, Tamnei Chachamim, so we have to be careful. People who have a connection to Kedusha and to Torah, according to this thesis that I'm presenting to you, that they have to be worried about this matter. And I saw in, again, this is a sefer that's quoted by Yabi Omer. I don't have the original svarim, but I see now in Yabi Omer, he cites everything. Literally, it's not a sefer the man did not know. So he quotes a sefer called Michas Aron. I think he lived during the days of the Chidah, several hundred years ago. And Michas Aron, and he actually, Rabbi Avadya Zatzal, one of his great milas is that every time he quotes a sefer, he just cites the entire sefer. Or whatever is relevant to that topic that he's, that's why his tshuvas are so lengthy. He quotes hundreds and hundreds of tshuvas. So he quotes his sefer, Michas Aron, and he writes, V'yazhiru l'bnei beiso, shegam heim yichasu yideyem, shegam heim yitlu yideyem. I'm back to the original Ha'ara that I said in the Mishnah Berurah, that what about women themselves? They themselves are eating food. So why does the Mishnah Berurah say they're involved in food preparation as opposed to indicating that they themselves are also eating? And he writes that if they don't, if they're not careful, harein mitamos yasamacholim, v'gormim ra libaleim v'livneim, they're going to cause bad to their husbands, to their entire families. Kamo she'akosav ha'shloh, because of the Shloah Kodesh, so Gorim Lehem Timtum Liba. So he's worried about the husbands and the sons and the daughters. And interestingly enough, that he refers to the Shloah Kodesh Timtum Aleim. What does he have to go to Timtum Aleim? It's a clear din of Shalach over here. A Gemara in Shabbos that Ruach Ra you have to be cognizant about. So apparently you see that Kanireh, this is a maskana that I came to based on my reading of this tshuva and based on the citation of Avadi quotes from this sefer Michas Aron, that those who are not as connected to Talmud Torah were less worried about the issue of Timtum Aleim. That's the maskana I came to. And it means there's a connection. I'm trying to connect the dots between Kedusha, not that women don't have Kedusha. Of course they have Kedusha. So I always commented that a woman, he has a Gemara in your mamas. The moment the woman is born, she already has Kedusha as herself. Full blown. Mashen Kein, a man, takes him 8 days to get that full blown Kedusha as herself. Based on Ammam, Hilchos Melachim, that with the Bris Milah, now becomes the Hashlama of the Kedusha of the man. Whatever the case is, this is a very fascinating comment on this Mishnah Berurah. And I want to also refer to another comment on the Mishnah Berurah in Sifkat and Beis. If you look in Sifkat and Beis here, you'll see in the Mishnah Berurah, he quotes from a Sefer, which has become actually more well known, primarily because of the Mishnah Berurah. Quotes from the Sefer Seder Ayom, which is a well-known Sefer. This is, if you have my text in the Mishnah Berurah, but if you don't have it, you can take a look in Sifkan Beis. It's four lines from the bottom of the page. Kosa B'Seder Ayom. The Seder Ayom is a Rishon, the Talmud of the Tumas Hadeshen. So he writes, Shelo Yiga B'Malbusha V'Chiyito, you're not allowed to touch your clothing until you wash your hands. And the Mishnah Berurah goes on, and this is a statement that he quotes, and then he says, "The Gemara lo mashma came." The Gemara does not seem to indicate that. That's in the Magen Avraham. And then it says, "Isa bibrachas daf nunalav al titol chaluk chashakris miyad hashamash mitilbash." Of course, everyone has a shamash, obviously. Everyone has a gabai. We're all adborim. Anyway, so don't take your beged in the morning from your assistant and put it on mishum sakonat mazikin. El yidleyu be'atzur in makom shu'usham. Take it by yourself. Vafila also hashamash kvar nata yadav. Even though he already washed his hands, your valet. Amina bi Gemara, yechatz adam pano biyad v'ragu v'chal yom v'shimko pono, uv'dinasein v'shein ala ochim v'chefim ein tzarech lichos v'ragu v'shachlis. I don't think we are accustomed to do that, dafka v'chitzas v'raglayim. But the point I'm trying to make, take a look at the Gemara in Brachas, he quotes in the Magen Avraham, it's not mashma. The Gemara daf sam l'chalaf. The Gemara somehow clearly indicates that before you wash your hands, you get dressed. So that's the issue that the Mishnah Berurah is addressing. How do you do that? The Gemara is against the Seder Ayom. The Seder Ayom suggests that you should not get dressed before you wash your hands. The Gemara says, Pum Faket. Now, the Seder Ayom lived, I think, during a little bit before the Beis Yosef. And I don't know if you look at Asher Yatzah posters. You probably don't. But I see them from different sources. So often in Asher Yatzah posters, they quote from the Seder Ayom. If you say Asher Yatzah slowly, you never have to worry about getting sick. It's one of the segulas. You'll never have to go to a doctor. Rabbi Bronfeld, Shlita, you're familiar with that. I mean, there are a number of segulas that I mentioned. Mishnah Berurah quotes, I told you, there's a segula. If you say Birchas Avosos slowly, you'll be Zoche to Panosa. That's a segula mentioned in the Mishnah Berurah. And I have a better segula. The best segula, it's a pasuk in Chumash. Kabeinu Sovicha Vesimecha, Laman Yarichan Yamecha. A school of Arichas Yomin is to honor your parents, honor your father, honor your mother. So, if the Seder Ayom says something, even though it's not in sync with the Gemara, I think we have to be choshesh with the Seder Ayom. He was a great Rishon. And here, as I said, I want to raise a question that someone asked me as well. Someone asked me, according to this, did the Mishnah Berurah, that you're not supposed to touch Malbushim, according to the Seder Ayom, first you have to wash your hands before you go ahead and get dressed. So he asked me, but I am nearsighted, can I touch my glasses? He asked me, before I wash my hands. So I told him that offhand, it would seem to me, I actually went looking, because I didn't want to take any chances, and as I said, here we have the Seder Ayom, and the reason why the Seder Ayom says what he says, you should not be mashe ruach ra on you. I'll be God of. The question is, why is the Elam not so nizar? Why is the Elam not so careful? So again, Rav Avadia said, Zatzal quotes from Achronim Avidu, the Lashon that he quotes from, again, the Ben Ishchai. I wrote it down. Dein lochush ozeh. Yan ki ruach ro lo tishre al kelim shel eitz u barzel. Velo al kelim shel tzemer u pishton. Rak hofetzes al mini machol u mashke. He limits ruach ro to machol u mashke. As I told you, this is out of my range, the parameters of ruach ro, but I'm reading to you from a great Achron, we quote some earlier sources, and therefore, the Rabbi Avadia says it doesn't apply, it's limited to ochlin umashkim, to food and drink, beverage and food, that's what you have to be concerned about, but not kelim that are made out of eitz and barzel, or kelim of tzemer, or pishna means begodim, you don't have to be so concerned about it. And then he says the following, quoting from the Chidah, v'imein ato omer king, if you don't say like this, tiksha, the following question should arise, heich nota la kli biyodo imamayim, how could you take the kli? The basin becomes tameh because of ruach ra, and you're using your kli dafka in the morning, as it's mentioned, and we mentioned, we quoted later on, that even though some people, I'm a doctor, can always use a kli whenever I wash my hands, no matter what the circumstances are, but mikadin is samakev, except here, as you have to wash with the kli. So how do you go ahead and come into contact with the kli? And this is also, as I said, relevant to a person gets up, and right away you're touching, you have to remove the blanket, remove the karva keset. So they're also in contact with pillows and blankets and sheets and who knows what. Why isn't that a problem? What about ruach ra? So you have to assume somehow that it's not shoreb ala kelim ve'ala begodim ve'ala dvarim ve'elu, and that's why I think we're not as nizar regarding the Seder Ayom as perhaps others might. And I'll just mention that since I started looking at that sefer by Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Hillel, I mentioned it yesterday and I happen to have it because it was given to me as a matana. So he has in his sefer also Shalom Jews by Yoshev Hayom Leisano. So he talks about, I want to put on my socks. It's freezing. It's the winter time. Before I wash my hands. So now the question is that a proper approach? So of course he's a Kabbalist. He's a Mekubal from the Gdol HaSfaradim, the great Poskim Shal Doreno. So he writes from the Ari HaKadosh that no, you should not get dressed before the Tzias Yadayim. So again, as I said, here we have those that are medactic, but the dictum apparently applies more to those who are following the Chachmei Asod, the Nistar. And again, as I said, that it would seem that Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Hillel, he quotes some other svarim, because of Chaim Palagi, also one of the great Sephardic poskim, that you're not allowed asur l'tlabesh before the Netilas Yadayim because they're worried about the Ruach Ra. But again, as I said, yesh al mi lismoch, that undoubtedly one should try to l'chatchila to wash negel vasa before he gets dressed. And but as I said, both in Ekroni, Ruach Ra does not really rest on one's garments. That's what he seems to be fairly clear. So if it takes you long to get dressed without your glasses because you can't see anything, you're nearsighted and you need your glasses in order to be able to navigate the shoals of your room or your house, whatever it may be, and it will delay the Netilas Yadayim because you can't do so. So again, people generally put on their glasses and rely on the Ben Ishchai, or rely on the poskim that I just mentioned from Avadya, that we're not so concerned about this issue. I think I already mentioned, this I'll be messiahing, that we quoted actually Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach a while ago. I told you I heard this also from Rapam, Zechatzai Lidracha. So they mentioned that the Ger Tzedek, in the days of the Grua, Count Potocki, when he was Meister Nefesh, HaKiddush Hashem, on Yom Tov of Shavuos in Vilna, so that was Machlish, the Ruach HaTumah, regarding the din of not walking down the Amos, but until Sedayim. Mishnah Berurah actually provides two rationales, the entire house, called Beso, Kedal Amos Domya. The question is, what does that mean? Pashuk Shah Kol Beso, the Gemara Erevin. Probably means kol chadro. The entire cheder is like dalan amos. It gives a second time that you should walk. Pachas pachas b'dalan amos. We just had the gemara at the beginning of Misha Echshech. The gemara says if a person finds himself erev Shabbos in a situation where he's carrying something, he doesn't know what to do. So the gemara gives you a series of etzos what to do. Whether you should go ahead and give it to a guy, that's the ideal because there's no din of shvisas guy on Shabbos. But to put it on the chamor is more difficult because there's a din of shvisas behema. And then the gemara finally is megale a new sod. Namely, the sort of walking pachas pachas dal amos. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes that in the beginning of Shulchan Aruch, Arachayim, with reference to walking dal amos without tzias yadayim, you'll walk pachas pachas dal amos. You stop every three amos, just like the Issa Daraisa of carrying on Shabbos only yom abed dal amos. So Rabbim, if you walk less than four amos, you stop, and then nocham ol three amos, and then you stop, nocham ol three amos. So the Mishnah Berurah gives that etza. It seems that etza is a din in haitzah. Ma kesha l'ruach ro. If anything, you want to get rid of the Ruach Ra as quickly as you can. We're talking about a sakona. So why would I go ahead and engage in this kind of stuff? Well, both of these etzes are not exactly ideal. But this, what's mentioned in the name of the Vilna Gaon, this Kabbalah, I did not hear from Rav Soloveitchik, but I heard it from Rav Shlomo Zalman Reubach and Rav Nevinsol Shlita confirmed this Shmua. And Rav Pam also mentioned this Shmua in the name of the Gra, that the Ger Tzedek, in the days of the Vilna Gaon, that he was machlish to Ruach Ra, the Gabi this halacha of Dal Ramos from Tzias Yadayim, that because of his Mesiras Nefesh. Again, as I said, this is all out of my realm. I have difficulty getting a handle on all this. It's not my currency, so to speak. But anyway, I'm just saying that even what we just mentioned today, that the Ruach Ra is a function of the level of Kedusha that a person has. It's a similar kind of halacha that we're assuming. And, but down the bottom line, which I have to mention again and again, because otherwise people will, I hope, not misunderstand me, but might actually misconstrue, that we assume even an Adam Chiloni, a secular person, people today are much more hygienically conscious, especially given Tkufata Corona that we are in. Unquestionably, people are being more careful about alcohol, not just alcohol, washing their hands. I probably wash my hands. If not for Corona, you would think I'm clearly... I have, shall we say, OCD. I must wash my hands 20 times a day with alcohol or with other kinds of soaps and what have you. I'm not joking. But generally, I don't do that. I'm not, he carries it with him. Wow, it's probably not even Hitzah on Shabbos. It probably comes like a tashin already. Din Malbush, I don't know. I'm just joking. Yeah. Probably requires an error. But whatever the case is, that... I mean, and by the way, I'll just mention, since I'm talking about this issue, so we assume that people wash their hands, and therefore even non-observant people, you don't have to be worried about it. And also, the question is, are my glasses considered to be a malbush? You know, Bizman Chazal, their glasses, you probably remember the pictures, maybe you've gone to museums, probably not, probably you've seen it online or whatever you've done. Namely, their spectacles that they used to wear, that were connected with all kinds of, they used to call them bati inayim. And at first there was a shaila whether that's a hitzah on Shabbos, if there's no Erev. Is that called carrying on Shabbos? What's the status of glasses? What is their, how do we view them? Is they considered to be a malbush, not a malbush? And this is the Nogiyat Hill, the Shabbos to Yitzhah. But as I said, really, there's no, and we assume again that this is a Avraham Shafayn Sitzatzal. I remember when timepieces, chronometers, otherwise known as watches, shonim. So you have a shon. What's that status? So luckily, Egus Reisha, he protects us. I mean, many assume that for a woman, generally women tend to have watches that are more in the getter of a tachshit. But many male timepieces are not so exquisite or so expensive unless you're, in the last 20 years, you're a chassan and they buy you a $5,000 watch, whatever it may be. But let's assume the average watch, like the one I'm wearing, I'm primarily interested in Zman Kriya Shema, Zman Tefillah, and the like. That's really where I'm holding, and the moment this watch is no longer functional, trust me, it's not a tachshit, not by any means. But Moshe writes the halacha that a watch is a malbush. Anything on the guf that's worn for different reasons is called a malbush. A pair of glasses that serves the body, probably even more obvious than a watch, it's also a din malbush, and that's what we assume. And that's basically the halacha lemaisa maskana regarding this matter. Okay. Have a wonderful Shabbos and.